Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC on Fox 22 event, which takes place in Sacramento, California. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we went 1-0 on our premium bets for UFC 206 to profit 2.175 units overall. We also lost our one-unit free bet. Back to the present, UFC on Fox 22 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and Big Network Fox this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a welterweight contest between Bojan Velikovic, who is 14-3-1, and Sultan Aliyev, who is 13-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Velikovic minus 210, the comeback, and Aliyev at plus 160. Right now, over at our sponsored sportsbook, 5dimes.eu, it's currently Velikovic at minus 155. Aliyev is at plus 135. So dog action coming in early. It's been pretty steady. I mean, there's some buyback right now on Velikovic as well. So I'm sure we're going to end up with a decent amount of two-way action on this fight for the sportsbooks overall in general. Aliyev, of course, the former Bellator veteran. A lot of people know him from his stint there, and he had some success. I mean, that loss to Rhino was definitely controversial there for him. But again, he's the type of fighter that has a ton of power. He has the takedown ability to get the fight to the floor, grind people out as well, but he's more known for his knockout power in the feet. Unfortunately for Aliyev, his debut didn't go so well in the UFC. I mean, a lot of people were kind of hyped about it and glad this guy was making the cut down to 170 pounds. And against Robertson, he ended up getting knocked out. So maybe 170 pounds isn't quite the right division for Aliyev. But again, from his background, I mean, he has the ability to take the fight to the floor. He's strong. He's physical. He's got knockout power. He's a little bit unorthodox on the feet. So he's a dangerous fighter. He can do pretty much everything. He can grind people out or knock them out on the feet as well. Now, he's not the type of guy that's going to get you down and try to submit you. That's just not his style. Velikovic, on the other hand, is a little bit more of the well-rounded fighter overall, and I think he's the type of fighter that continues to improve his game. He's going to be a little bit longer here. I think 170 is the right weight class for him. He's fought up at 185 pounds in the past as well, but Velikovic at 170 pounds I think is a tough out for a lot of guys. He's technical, he's clean, his stand-up is pretty diverse, and he has the ability to hurt people on the feet as well. He doesn't have huge knockout power, but he could definitely get the job done. He has enough technique that he can land hard enough that it definitely affects people for sure. And then on the ground, he's pretty slick with the submission game. His offensive wrestling's pretty good as well. And then his defensive wrestling continues to improve. I mean, in the past, that's been a little bit of a kryptonite for him, where he's been put on his back and control a little bit, but he manages to scramble out, get back to his feet in most cases now. And again, that's becoming less of a problem for him, which is good to see. So I've been a fan of Velikovic. I mean, he's the type of guy that's honestly been around the sport for a long time. He's only 27 years old and he continues to improve. So this fight should be pretty good. I mean, I think technically speaking, Velikovic is just a little bit better. I think he does have the advantage over Aliyev here. He's going to have the advantage as far as reach on the feet a little bit. I trust him, even though he has been wobbled in the past. I still trust him as far as chin goes overall, because he's the type of guy that seems to recover fairly quickly, even if he is rocked. And I think he probably will maintain this fight upright and stay off his back a little bit. So I expect if he does hit the scorecards, Velikovic is going to win this thing. I expect if there is a finish in this fight, it's probably going to be Velikovic winning that as well. So it's hard not to pick against Velikovic here. I think that he is just the better fighter at this point of his career, and I think it's probably going to show. And I'm hoping that he does get the W here and starts kind of a nice little run. I know he's coming off of that majority decision draw to Mike Graves. Graves is a tough out, so I really believe that wasn't a bad situation for him. And before that, of course, he won a couple fights. So he's definitely on a nice little, I guess, winning streak despite that draw. And I think with this fight here, he gets back on track and he starts making some waves in the 170-pound division. So my pick officially is going to be Velikovic.
When Sultan Aliyev was making his UFC debut, a lot of people just thought that he was going to be the same blanket that he was in his Bellator run, where he was stifling even as a middleweight, and you know, he was just very difficult to deal with. He could get on top of you and it was very frustrating. And he didn't do that. I mean, he came out there firing out of the gate, winging punches, throwing a lot of spinning stuff, really wild, really reckless. And Kenny Robertson just caught him coming in and put him out cold. And Kenny Robertson is not known for his striking. So that opened my eyes quite a bit. And the fact that just how easily he went down. I mean, Robertson doesn't normally have a lot of power. So I just think, Oliyev maybe was just in a little too over his head. Maybe the weight cut down to welterweight sapped into his durability a little bit. Sometimes that happens when a fighter drops an extra weight class. So, I just was not impressed whatsoever. And then now he's taken over a year off and he's returning. And I think he's facing someone that's an upgrade in terms of, opposition. Bojan Velikovic is very talented. He's way better on the feet than Kenny Robertson was. So if Oliyev decides to stand and do that same thing again, where he's winging crazy strikes, he's going to go down again for sure. If Oliyev goes to his roots and goes to the grappling and wrestling, then he's got a chance. But even there, I don't know if it's a walk in the park. As Nick mentioned, Velikovic's last fight was a draw, a majority draw against Michael Graves. And Michael Graves has excellent wrestling. He's a guy that has dominated with his wrestling in the UFC so far, where he had wins over Vicente Luque, Randy Brown, by taking guys down and working them over on the canvas. And Graves wasn't able to do that against Bojan. Bojan, he got taken down in the first round, and then he made some adjustments, adapted, and wasn't able to get taken down, and then he really started to fire back. So I don't think Oliyev can take Bojan down for three rounds either. I think it would be way too taxing. It would take a lot out of him, and at some point, Velikovic would stuff the takedowns and then just start teeing off. So I think if Bojan can get this fight into the kind of phone booth level or even in the clinch, that's where he really is going to do a lot of work. He has great knees on the inside, great elbows. He can really do some good dirty boxing. He just has to be a little careful because, you know, if you're facing a grappler, a guy that wants to get it to the floor, and you do a lot of your damage on the inside, you are leaving yourself open to, you know, some clinch takedowns, some trips, body lock takedowns, you know the gist. So, for the most part though, I just think, Bojan is the better fighter. He's, has more momentum right now, and I don't see Oliyev taking him down for three rounds. So I think, Bojan can win a decision or win by TKO at some point. Now dropping all the way down to the flyweight division, we have Hector Sandoval, who is 12-3, taking on Freddy Serrano, who is 3-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
I put Serrano -170, the comeback on Sandoval +130. Right now it's actually flipped to Sandoval -125, Serrano +105. So virtually a pick 'em with a slight lean towards Sandoval. And action has come in that way, obviously, to flip the line like that. So more people are impressed with Sandoval, I guess, overall, compared to what they've seen recently from Serrano. Now, of course, Sandoval has a background. He's training with Team Alpha Male, so he has an elite group of guys that are in the lighter weight classes, such as flyweight, bantamweight type of fighters that he's going to be training with here. So he gets to wrestle with some of the best in the world, obviously, some of the best ground guys, period, his submission or his stand-up game. He's got guys in that realm as well. So he's got a complete team around him. I mean, he really, again, I know that there's been some issues with Alpha Male recently. A lot of them are heading over to Denver or whatever with Ludwig and crew. But that being said, there's still quite a bit of talent left over in Alpha Male, and I think Sandoval is definitely going to reap the benefits from that. So that being said, he's a typical Alpha Male type of fighter. I mean, I think he's got a little bit more holes in his games than the usual guys. I mean, he's a little bit wild and a little bit more aggressive at times, and sloppy aggression at times, I guess, than some of the guys on the squad. But he's the type of guy that on the feet could definitely hurt you. He's got power. He's got speed. He's got some wrestling ability as well. He can be put on his back, but he does seem to scramble up. So he's one of just these complete fighters that I think, again, as he progresses throughout his career, I mean, he's not a young gun by any means. He's 30 years old. So, but still, maybe with his experience in the UFC, he starts to improve fight by fight. I mean, in his debut, unfortunately for him, I mean, he fought a very game Wilson Hayes that obviously he came into the bout on short notice, Sandoval did, to take that fight. So, I mean, that was kind of going against him right there. But Hayes was able to finish him early in round one. So he's not going to have that issue with Serrano. I mean, Serrano is definitely a decent ground guy. He's a wrestler as far as background goes. He's another one of these short, stocky, powerful guys. He has a little bit of a stand-up game, which can be effective, obviously. Even with his kicking game, it can be effective. So Serrano is one of those guys that's also improving. But at age 37, I mean, how high of ability or how much can he improve his game to go to that next level, and how much time does he have left? I'm not so sure. But Serrano's definitely a game fighter. I mean, again, that strength, his ability to slam people down and get the takedowns, and then his power on the feet is definitely something to watch out for. So in my opinion, this is a true coin flip type of fight. I mean, I could see it realistically going either way. I think this is going to be an ultra competitive decision. It's going to probably come down to who's controlling top position on the ground with a quick takedown or two, who's going to be able to maintain on top, or once it does stay up on the feet, who's going to be winning the stand-up exchanges. And I think overall, I'm going to slightly have to lean a little bit more towards Sandoval as well. It's not a confident pick, and the way everybody's betting Sandoval, it's actually almost making me not like him as much. But again, in my opinion, it is kind of a toss-up type of fight. But I think what's going to happen here is we're going to see a close competitive battle with Sandoval basically edging it out basically on points over Serrano more than anything else. So I'm going to go his way, but this is the type of fight that both guys are so similar that truly, I mean, flip a coin to see the outcome here. So it is a true pick-em type of fight, but I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Sandoval. Not a confident pick, though.
Freddie Serrano, to me, is kind of like a less experienced, more raw, less refined version of Yoel Romero. I mean, they both come from really impressive amateur wrestling backgrounds. They're both tremendous athletes. They both got into the MMA game way late, but Serrano got in even later. I mean, he's only had four professional fights. He did compete on that Ultimate Fighter season of Tough Latin America. But for the most part, Serrano is just getting a little bit too late of a start. I mean, yes, he does have two wins in the UFC, but it's not exactly like they were against world beaters, you know, Yao Zakui. And so I don't think that it's the most amazing thing that he was able to start his UFC career with two straight wins. His last fight, Ryan Benoit, it was just kind of a, even though Benoit is not that good, you know, a guy that basically is a stand-up guy that wants to just wing big punches, Serrano couldn't really keep up with him. Serrano was throwing a lot of spinning stuff, a lot of, you know, flashy attacks, and nothing was landing. So it just was not a great performance by Serrano. So, and he ended up losing the decision. So I think this time around, if Serrano does that again, then Sandoval's just going to outpace him. Sandoval's a guy that is very aggressive, high action, high volume striker, puts a lot into his strikes. So if Serrano gets into a firefight with him, I think Sandoval gets the better of it. If Serrano wrestles with Sandoval, I definitely can see Serrano getting takedowns. I don't know if he can keep him down, though. As you saw in Sandoval's UFC debut, which was on super short notice against Wilson Hayes, and you got to remember, Wilson Hayes was planning to fight for the title at that show, and then the champ, Demetrius Johnson, dropped out. So that was his replacement. So Wilson Hayes was preparing for, you know, to fight the best in the world, and ended up fighting Sandoval instead. So it's not a huge shocker that Sandoval lost that fight. But even then, Hayes grabbed about three or four takedowns, and Sandoval got up the first three times. So depending on how good Freddie Serrano's top control is, he might just gas himself out looking for takedowns if that's his game plan in this fight, is to drag this fight to the floor. And if it's a stand-up fight, yeah, Serrano has a lot of power, and he's athletic, so he can land some pretty crazy stuff, but I don't think he can keep up with Sandoval. So I'm in agreement with Nick. I think that this is Sandoval's fight to lose, as long as he can keep this fight upright and as long as he can keep the high pace going without slowing down. So my pick is going to be Hector Sandoval as well. Now, moving up to the bantamweight division, we have Eddie Wineland, who is 22-11-1, taking on Takeya Mitsugaki, who is 21-10-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Wineland, -245, the comeback in Mizugaki at plus 175. Right now it's Weiland minus 225, Mizugaki's plus 185. So line margins have tightened up here a little bit, and there's two-way action. Nothing crazy in this fight here. Seems about right. I mean, both these guys are, again, veterans in the UFC, have both fought a tremendous roster. I mean, as far as if you look at the competition level, they faced some of the best that the bantamweight division has had to offer. So it's not like they're going to be surprised by anything these days. I mean, they fought again the who's who. So matching up with each other kind of makes sense to me at this point, because they're almost both in around the same spot in their careers where they need a quality win to kind of keep things rolling for them. If not, I mean, I could see either one of these guys kind of talking about retirement. It's unfortunate because they're only like 32, 33 years old, but still they've had long careers and MMA years. They're beyond that path. And it looked like for a while that it was going to happen to Weiland, but I mean, he definitely had a nice bounce back performance against Sainz, which a lot of us counted him out. I mean, we thought, okay, Weiland's basically coming off that decision loss to Caraway. I mean, Caraway is a ground fighter, and basically Weiland was getting outstruck in that spot, which is kind of a head scratcher. But again, bouncing back and getting a win over Frankie Sainz was pretty impressive, and the way he went about it and getting the knockout win is even better for him. So Weiland definitely looked like he's back in form, or at least what we expect to see him in fights. He looks like he's a little bit more back than what we figured. So I don't think he's quite done yet. Now, Mizugaki, on the other hand, again, he's been fighting some of the best in the division. So it's not going to be surprised to lose to a guy like Cody Garbrandt, who's fighting Dominic Cruz for the title here soon. Before that, of course, he had a decent showing over Roop, but of course, Roop is no longer on the UFC roster either. And then he got blown out by Sterling. He got blown out by Cruz as well. So the decline might actually be here for Mizugaki. And fighting a guy like Weiland that has that much power after you're coming off of a knockout loss is probably not the ideal situation for you either. So this comes down to, honestly, if it stays on the feet, Mizugaki could probably outpoint Weiland and win a fight that way. Both these guys have the ability to take the fight to the ground and control people as well. Both these guys have the ability to sprawl and brawl. So I do think that this fight probably ends up on the feet. And I think Weiland is the more powerful striker. I think it's going to be competitive. Don't get me wrong. It's not like Weiland's going to get blown out on points. But I think Mizugaki is a little bit more technical. I think he can pretty much throw it a little bit more of a steady pace, and he can basically outpoint Weiland on the feet. But I trust Weiland's chin, even though they've both been knocked out basically the same amount of times throughout their career. I still trust Weiland a little bit more here. So I think Weiland's power is going to be the difference in this fight, and I think he's going to end up catching Mizugaki and probably putting him out. If it hits the scorecards, we're going to see a pretty competitive decision. I can imagine that. But overall, I still have to lean towards Weiland. I mean, he's coming in as about a 2-1 favorite for a reason, and I do think a lot of it has to do with just the power advantage. I think he's going to be landing that solid shot over Mizugaki, where Mizugaki is going to probably have to just bank on outpointing Weiland. So I'm going to pick Weiland to come away and get a second win in a row here and get back on track.
The one thing that's scaring me away from thinking Eddie Weiland dominates this fight is the Caraway fight. I know that he's had a couple things injury-wise going on, some personal stuff, but man, how does a guy that was one of the scariest strikers in the history of the bantamweight division lose a stand-up fight to Brian Caraway? Like, it just boggles my mind. So, when Eddie Weiland's on, he's amazing because he's a counter striker, but he kind of, most counter strikers, they have to sit back and wait for their opponent to come to them. Maybe they throw a lot of feints to try to figure out how their opponents react to strikes. But Eddie Weiland, he's a counter striker that kind of pushes forward and forces his opponent to attack him, and then he counters. And it's brilliant. It's been a style that has worked so well throughout his career. And the guy clearly has some of the biggest power in the history of the division as well. So when he connects, I mean, people go down. I mean, you saw it. Frankie Sainz is a tough SOB, and he could not withstand, the power and striking of Eddie Weiland. So if Eddie Weiland, the same one that fought Frankie Sainz, shows up, then I think Takeya Michigaki could get blown out of the water. But if the inconsistent Eddie Weiland shows up, that lost to Johnny Eduardo in the first round, that got outstruck by Brian Caraway, then stranger things have happened. I mean, Takeya Michigaki is not a guy that you should be sleeping on. I know he's lost three of his last four fights, but look at the guys he fought. Cody Garbrandt fighting for the title, Dominic Cruz, the champ, and Aljamain Sterling, one of the best prospects in the bantamweight division. So those are his three losses out of his last four fights. So those are all guys that would beat Eddie Wineland too. So it's not like he's completely washed up. It's just he had some really tough fights. Now, that being said, Michigaki, when he's on, he has a high pace, high volume. He has a very solid fundamental boxing attack, and he's not bad on the ground either, not terrible. So I think Michigaki can definitely mix it up and potentially win this fight if Wineland isn't able to, you know, just put the pedal to the metal and just go for it. And that being said, it's just tough to pick against Wineland here. I think if they both land the same shot, Wineland's power will prevail and he can get a knockout a lot more likely than Michigaki. I can see Michigaki hurting at Wineland, but I can also definitely see Wineland just flatlining Michigaki with a big shot. So, I'm going to side with Wineland here. I think the veteran still has a few tricks up his sleeve, and I think he can pull this one out. So my pick is Eddie Wineland. Now moving on to the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have Leslie Smith, who is 8-7-1, taking on Irene Aldana, who is 7-2 in a women's bantamweight fight. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened on Donna -230 to come back on Smith at +170. Right now it's Aldana at -310. Come back on Smith is +255. Not really that surprised by it. I mean, Aldana is definitely the more popular fighter. A lot of people believe that she's, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't say legitimately a contender because I think she's far from it, to be honest with you, if you look at her. But at the same time, her stand-up game is something to be impressed about and want to watch because the girl brings it. I mean, she has some length for the division. She's got some power. She's got that aggression. She's got some accuracy on the feet as well. So she's definitely fun to watch on the feet. She's just, in my opinion, she's a little bit overrated though. Her ground definitely still needs a lot of work and development. I mean, she has a little bit of a sub game going for her, but the best path to victory usually against Aldana is to floor her and get her on the ground and kind of grind her out a little bit. Or, I mean, if you look, take her in deep waters a little bit, and Pacheco, in her past gave her problems as well. Of course, she's been fighting most of her fights in Invicta. Coming off a pretty impressive win over Faith Van Duen in her last fight, which is no easy out either. So that was impressive. So I think there's a lot of good to like about Aldana. I'm just not as sold as everybody else is out there on her. And I think, believe it or not, Leslie Smith is going to give her a battle. It's unfortunate. I mean, Leslie Smith doesn't seem to get a ton of respect out there overall, but she's a tough out. I mean, she brings it every fight. You know what to expect with Leslie Smith. She's going to come forward. She's going to push a high pace. She's going to try to be the aggressor. It's just a lot of times she runs into somebody that's a little bit more technical and a little bit better than she is. That's why she's almost at a spot right now where she has about a 500 record. Not to mention, it didn't really help all that much that her ear exploded against Jessica Eye, and it was basically, you know, ripping off there. So that's is something to watch out for too in a fight like this, especially against Aldana, because I mean, Aldana could definitely do some damage. She has enough power to maybe simulate that again. I hope not. I mean, for crying out loud, hopefully that's that isn't going to be a concern in this fight. But outside of that, I mean, Smith is, again, a tough, aggressive fighter. She's going to try to grind people out a little bit. She does have a better ground game than Aldana. And I think even on the feet, even though she's going to be getting tagged and picked apart a little bit, I mean, she's tough as nails. She'll keep on coming. And she's going to make this an interesting fight, to say the least. So I think she's going to hang with Aldana. Unless Aldana goes out there and floors her in a couple punches, I think this is going to be a war. But I do think that Aldana should get by in this fight and probably comes away, maybe with a late stoppage. Maybe she busts Smith up and gets a stoppage that way, or she possibly wins on the scorecards. But I'm not as sold as everybody else is, because again, Leslie Smith is one of these people that, in my opinion, pushes a high pace. She's just a grinding style, tough out, tough to get rid of, but she's just not really overly, I mean, impressive in any particular area. She's not an awesome striker that's just going to overwhelm you on the feet. She's not that wrestler that's going to take you down, slam you, and just dominate you on the ground either. So Smith is just solid everywhere. She's not great anywhere type of fighter, where Aldana has definitely a lot more upside, and she can be a special fighter if she keeps on improving. So I'll lean a little bit more towards Aldana, but those of you guys that are going to put her in parlays and whatnot, just be careful out there, because Aldana, I'm telling you, she's a little bit overrated. She's not quite as good as everybody thinks she is.
I agree that Aldana is a little bit overrated, but you do have to at least give her some credit here. I mean, in all of her wins, she has won by stoppage, and she has dominated. So when she's winning, she is winning hard. You look at her Invicta fights. She had five fights in Invicta. Four of them were first round stoppages, and her loss was for the title against Tonya Evinger. And that's a fight that kind of was the most telling because, when she has space, Aldana is ferocious. She has really good power, about as good power in her hands as any woman in the 135 pound division. And she is extremely aggressive and is able to, jump on submissions when she hurts her opponents too. So, very opportunistic. But that being said, she's not amazing defensively, both with her striking defense. I think she moves pretty well, but she, when she's ready to attack, she's not afraid to eat shots to send them out. So that is something to consider. And she is not that great with her ground defense. Evinger was able to take her down and keep her down and just kind of beat her up and just wore her down. And then by the fourth round, she was able to get a stoppage victory. Now, in this fight, I don't see Leslie Smith being able to employ that attack. Leslie Smith is very aggressive. She's very fun to watch. She's a high volume striker, very good conditioning, is just able to go, go, go. She's fearless. I mean, she took on freaking Cyborg in Chris Cyborg's UFC debut. So she's not afraid of anybody, but sometimes that's almost to a fault. And I think in this fight, she's going to get in some trouble here. Leslie Smith just is not on par with Irina Aldana on the technical level on the feet. And I don't think she can withstand Aldana's power and pace. So if Aldana starts to connect, I think Smith can get knocked out for sure. Cyborg dropped her. As Nick mentioned, Jessica Eye exploded her ear because she had some cauliflower ear going. And I think Aldana can do the same thing. I just think she lights her up on the feet and probably gets a TKO victory. But just be careful out there because Aldana, as good as she is, she is not as well-rounded as some of you guys may think. So I'm going to pick Aldana, but again, just be careful. Now moving on, we have a lightweight contest between Josh Emmett, who is 10-0, and Scott Holtzman, who is 9-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds makers perspective on this one?
Up in Emmett, -230, the comeback on Holtzman at +170. Line staying fairly steady. It's right now it's -180 for Emmett. The comeback on Holtzman is +158. So actually, as if this morning it was steady, it dropped a little bit more here, it seems like, recently. So a little bit more action coming in on the underdog Holtzman to drop the line some, but I'm sure it'll be again hovering around that 2-1 mark for the most part along the way. Emmett, man, I mean, what can you say about the guy? Another one of these team alpha male fighters that, I mean, but kind of one of the bigger guys in alpha male as far as the weight class goes. He's 155 pounds, a true lightweight, a true powerhouse. And his win over Tuck was nothing but impressive. I mean, he took that fight on short notice in his UFC debut and showed you what he could do. I mean, the guy has a ton of power in his hands. The guy has a good wrestling game where he can put most people on his back, control them. He's got obviously a good submission game to go along with it. So he's a very well-rounded fighter and he's a powerhouse to go along with it. Which makes him that much tougher, I think. And he's got that accuracy. He's got that little bit of confidence that goes along with it. A little bit of swag from alpha male. All those guys, you know, seem to know how good they really are. I don't know, you know, if that translates or not at times, but it seems in the most part it has. So I think he's fits right in that mold. And, Emmett against Holtzman here probably has a lot of success. I mean, Holtzman matches up fairly well with Emmett because Holtzman's another one of these guys that's strong. He's got that wrestling background. He's able to keep fights upright for the most part and usually outpoint people on the feet. And he could do some damage too, because he's not exactly a weak fighter by any means. So he's a powerful guy as well. So you have power versus power here, going kind of up against it. But I think what the difference is going to be, I mean, Holtzman's able to kind of bully most people around and he's not going to be able to do that against Emmett. He wasn't able to do that against Dober while he lost that fight. That's why he struggled a little bit. And that was the first time. I mean, that was his only setback throughout his career. He rebounded nicely against Pfister in his last fight. But that being said, I think he's not going to be able to do that against Emmett either. So he's not going to be able to be the bully in the fight. Emmett's going to be the one that's going to be making him pay for it. If Holtzman is coming in overly aggressive, Emmett's, I mean, punching power and his accuracy is going to definitely play into this. So I think it's Emmett's fight to win or lose. I think it is going to probably be competitive because, again, matchup wise, styles make fights and they do match up fairly well together. I think it comes down to Emmett just basically being a little bit better of a striker of the two. And I think he's going to be landing the harder shots along the way as well. And I think he can stay off his back and not be bullied in this fight. So with all that being said, it should lead to a scorecards win for Emmett. I do expect it, again, to be competitive, but if anybody finishes this fight, I would think that it's probably Emmett maybe knocking Holtzman out as well. So if there is going to be a stoppage, I lean towards Emmett. If it hits the cards, I lean a little bit towards Emmett. So it's hard not to pick Emmett in this spot over Holtzman. But I do think that Holtzman is going to be game, and he'll definitely put it a tough fight or a tough test for Emmett to pass in his second UFC fight. So this is a good progression for the UFC to match him up this way, and I think it's one that he passes, though. So Emmett is my pick to win.
This fight could definitely be competitive. The main thing here for me is Scott Holtzman primarily lives by the ground, dies by the ground. He has a solid overall grappling game, and he has some pretty good clinch takedowns, trip takedowns. But when he gets in there against really good wrestlers, he usually ends up getting on bottom position because he loses scrambles. That happened against Drew Dober, even though Dober, you know, is not exactly an elite ground fighter, but Dober was able to get top position against him, and Holtzman couldn't do much about it. And Holtzman did have a little bit of trouble holding top position in his last fight against Cody Pfister. I mean, for the most part, Holtzman won that fight because he outworked Pfister on the feet. And in the stand-up, Holtzman landed, you know, a nice head kick that hurt Pfister. He was aggressive. He had pushed a good pace. But that was against Cody Pfister. I don't think he can do the same thing here against Josh Emmett. Emmett looked really crisp in his UFC debut. And you just have to remember, this guy made his UFC debut. It was on 4 days' notice. Yes, he was training for another fight. But it was 4 days' notice, and he had to travel to Europe from California. So the complete other side of the world. And he was able to not only do that, but win. And he was dominating that fight until he hurt his finger in the third round. So I really do like Emmett here. I think he's got a lot of talent. He has really nice technical stand-up. He has a lot of power, and he has good combinations. Holtzman showed some improvement in his stand-up in his last fight, but I don't think he's quite on the level of Emmett. And if he gets into a stand-up fight against Emmett, I expect Holtzman to lose that. And Emmett does have a bit of a wrestling background, so if it goes to the ground, I think Emmett can either work his way back to his feet, or he can just get top position and potentially just score some points from that spot. So unless Holtzman has continued to develop his stand-up game and has surpassed Emmett, which I think is an unlikely situation, then I see Josh Emmett being a Team Alpha Male guy fighting in Sacramento. I expect him to win this fight and potentially win it convincingly. Now, moving up to the welterweight division, we have James Muntasri, who is 9-4, taking on Alex Morano, who is 12-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Muntasri, -150, the comeback on Morano at +110. And right now it's actually Morano -115, Muntasri is -105. So staying near pick'em type of spot, but obviously the public action coming in on Morano early on here. Tough one because it's the situation where Morano is a really solid fighter. But watching him fight, I mean, he definitely has flaws in his game as well. And he's just not a very consistent, high-paced type of fighter. He's the type of fighter that it's just difficult to finish, and he just keeps coming at you, and I mean, he mixes things up. I mean, look at the fight with Noak, for example. I mean, he shouldn't have won that. A lot of us thought that he lost that decision, myself included. Noak should have come away with that win, but he's the type of fighter that's always in a fight, and it always makes it a close type of matchup for you. And against Muntasri, I mean, even though he's at a disadvantage in several areas in this fight, I think one thing that he does have over Muntasri is definitely the cardio edge and the experience where he can go deep and he can take over fights in the second and third round. And that's a spot where he's going to probably need to do that against Muntasri as well. Cause Muntasri, man, he's a heck of a front runner, especially early on. I mean, There's no doubt he's got nasty power on the feet. I mean, he's a special type of striker with his finishing ability on the feet. And then, of course, he does have some decent wrestling. I mean, his kryptonite has been the ground, of course, but in most cases, he's able to sprawl and brawl and keep it upright. It's the problem with Mutasari is he does throw so much power into most of his strikes that he does tend to wear himself out as the fight progresses. And then against a guy like Murano, where he can withstand the punishment and just kind of hang in there and then find his spots as the person tires. I mean, that's just kind of a stylistically a pretty decent matchup for him, but is he going to be able to weather the storm? Cause Murano does get hit quite a bit and he's been rocked in the past. And Mutasari, he's not one to not finish the job once he starts it. I know, again, I mean, dating back to his debut against Ellenberger, he was a front runner, almost finished that fight several times. Ellenberger came back and stole that decision, which I thought Mutasari wanted, honestly. But that being said, and that was against Joe Ellenberger, by the way, not Jake, of course. But that being said, Mutasari has improved since then. I mean, he had, again, a setback against Kevin Lee. That Lee looked phenomenal in that fight. But Mutasari's better than that. So at 170, I think he has found a spot where he's more comfortable with his weight. I think his cardio can be a little bit better as well in this weight class. At welterweight, so far, so good for him. But I don't know. It's hard to trust him all the way because – as the fight progresses, I mean, it's one of those spots that he could let you down, and then Murano could come away with a decision type of win here. But overall, I just do think Mutasari is the much better fighter on the feet. He's the much more dangerous fighter. Murano isn't going to be able to get Mutasari down, at least in round one early on. In fact, I think Mutasari actually out of the two has a better wrestling, and he might be able to put Murano on his back. So we'll see how that goes, because if any kryptonite in Murano's game through the years, it's definitely been that he's been controlled a little bit too much underground, and sometimes he's content to just stay on his back. But I don't think that's going to be the case here. I think more than anything else, these guys kind of neutralize each other out underground as it goes, and I think it stays standing. And if it stays standing, Mutasari is the better striker of the two and the more dangerous striker of the two, so I have to lean his way. So I'm going to go against the public grain here, and I think that Mutasari, hopefully his cardio does hold, because if this thing does drag out, I will be a little bit concerned. But overall, I think Mutasari can win this fight. He is the better fighter. I think he's the more dangerous fighter of the two as well. So I'm going to pick him to win this fight.
If you've watched Mutasari's fight so far in the UFC, both at lightweight and at welterweight, so far his kryptonite has been guys that wanted to get the fight to the floor and avoid the stand-up exchanges with him. And those were the three fights he lost. Granted, the Joe Ellenberger fight could have and probably should have gone Mutasari's way, but that was one where a guy was looking for takedowns. The Kevin Lee fight clearly was looking for takedowns. And his last fight, Alex Oliveira. Oliveira grabbed two takedowns and was able to win a decision. So in all the fights where Mutasari has been allowed to stand and bang, he's clearly won. Now, against Alex Murano, I don't think that's going to be a problem at all. I mean, honestly, Murano's the guy that's usually worried about people taking him down. He has atrocious takedown defense for the most part, gets put on his back all the time. So he's more on the ground, been worried about defensively with his not just his takedown defense, but having a good guard and being active off of his back and going for submissions and stuff. So I do not expect Mutasari to be going for submissions and takedowns and everything. And if this fight stays standing, I just see Mutasari winning it. Mutasari has excellent technique on the feet, great kicks. He has a great kind of taekwondo base where he can just really do some damage with some spinning attacks. His knees are good. He has good power in his hands. And my only issue with Mutasari is whether or not he can keep a good pace for three straight rounds, because he does kind of have a history of slowing down, especially in the third. But for the most part, Alex Murano did not impress me that much in his UFC debut. Yeah, he won, but he shouldn't have. I thought that Kyle Note kind of got robbed in that decision. And Murano didn't do that much offensively. He didn't really land any big shots. And I think Mutasari is going to really crack him in a stand-up fight here. So I'm picking James Mutasari. I think he can win by knockout or decision. Now, sticking with the welterweight division, we have Brian Barberina, who's 12-3, taking on Colby Covington, who's 10-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Covington, minus 315. The comeback on Barberina at plus 235. Right now, looking over at Five Dimes, is Covington minus 360. The comeback on Barberina is plus 300. So a little bit more action coming in Covington's way. Now, early on, it was Barberina's way with the straight bets, but now people are starting to parlay and also come back straight on Covington as well. And I agree with it. I mean, it's tough because Barberina, if you look at his resume, I mean, they basically tried to throw him to the wolves along the way throughout his career, and he just hasn't given. I mean, the guy is tough as nails. He's one of those guys that's not a flashy fighter again in any particular area. He's just tough. He doesn't stop. He has the will to win. His wrestling, he's just, again, okay at every area. He's solid, but he's not great. He doesn't excel in any particular area. So it makes him a solid fighter. But the toughness about him is what makes him a tough out, I think. His heart and his, you know, everything that goes along with it. His stamina is decent. He's basically been able to outlast most of the guys that he's been in there with and then start taking control when those people start fading. Well, the problem here is Covington's probably not going to be that guy. I mean, even if it is a grueling fight and Covington's having difficulties getting Barbarina down as it progresses, I still think Covington's cardio is okay enough to still maintain it throughout three rounds. And not just that. I mean, Barbarina – if this stays a striking game, I guess you could say that Barbarina definitely has a little bit more of an advantage, but Covington's striking has improved quite a bit as well. So I don't think Barbarina is going to blow him out on the feet either. I think it's going to be competitive on the feet. I think Covington obviously has room to grow and is still going to be improving that area, coming from his wrestling background. But more than that, he's just going to outpoint Barbarina, whether it is getting the takedowns, whether it is pinning him up against a cage and outpointing him that way. So for me, the buck stops here with Barbarina, honestly. I don't think he's going to pull off this win. I think Covington is going to continue to get, like, again, back on track. I know he's suffered that loss to Alves, which was a minor setback for him. I mean, he got caught in that guillotine choke. That guillotine choke is sick. So, I mean, I don't even fault him for it. I think he has probably learned from that, and it's only made him better. But beyond that, I mean, Covington looks like he's getting better fight by fight, and I think he's going to continue to progress here. So I just think stylistically this is a bad matchup for Barbarina because he's not going to probably be able to outlast the guy. I think Covington's going to be too much for him in pretty much every area, so I'm going to pick him to win this fight. So Covington's my pick.
And this is definitely a fight where MMA math just doesn't work because obviously both these guys fought Warley Alves. Covington was choked out quickly, and Barbarina weathered the early storm and then dominated the next two rounds and won a decision as a huge underdog. But if you're looking at these fighters, even though Barbarina beat Alves, I mean, I just think Covington should, on paper, have a cakewalk here. Barbarina, his last two fights were both huge upset wins where he lost the first round, his opponents faded, and then he won the next either by stoppage or won the next two rounds and won a decision. And I just don't see Colby Covington fading. Barbarina is tough as nails and there is no quitting him. And he is a blood and guts and heart type of fighter. He's a very exciting type of dude, but I just think Colby Covington's going to be too much for him. The main thing here is Covington has a very aggressive style of wrestling, great takedowns. And once he does get you to the floor, he stays on top of you and just beats you up. He can eventually wear you down and get the finish. And his stand-up is improving enough to the point where he can hold his own long enough to set up the takedowns, which is a very important step for wrestlers. And while Barbarina can do a lot of damage when he's pushing the tempo and his opponents are slowing down and he can get, you know, land some good knees and elbows and punches, I just don't see him doing that against Covington. I think Covington just takes him down all three rounds, stays on top of him, and either wins a decision or maybe gets a late stoppage. The main difference here is Barbarina is just not fighting a guy that's going to slow down. Covington's gone the distance multiple times already in his UFC career, and he's not afraid to do it again here. So I think he can just keep Barbarina on his back and win a decision. So my pick is Colby Covington. Now, dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Cole Miller, who is 21-10 with one no contest, taking on Mizuto Hirota, who is 18-7-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open this fight exactly a pick on my minus 120 either way. Right now, looking where five dimes, it's actually Hirota minus 115, Miller minus 105. So basically a pick him with a very, very slight lean towards Hirota. And there has been two action in this fight as well. And I think I expect to continue to be that way, like flipping back and forth, maybe 115 Miller, 115 Hirota or whatnot that way. So a lot of two action on this fight. And I think it's just a difficult fight to really pick and to see how it plays out, because obviously the advantages for both guys are a little bit different. I mean, Miller is a pretty complete fighter. He's got length for the weight class. We all know that. He's got a tremendous skill set because he's got decent striking on the feet. not the most powerful guy that he's going to knock you out with one punch, but he definitely, you got to be careful with him because he obviously he's had some knockouts on his resume and he's had some setups. I mean, he's been able to rock people and then submit them as well throughout his career. So Miller on the feet is no slouch, but the ground is his, definitely his area where he excels at the most. That's his strong point, and I think that's where he's going to have an advantage over Hirota as well. Now, of course, you prefer a ground guy to get top position. That's where he could do the most work at the best damage usually along the way. But against Hirota, I think that's going to be a difficult task. And Miller, even off his back with his length, with his slick submission ability, can obviously win fights off his back. We've seen in the past as well with his arm bars, triangles type of situations there. So he's very active, very long, very difficult to deal with on the ground in most cases. But Hirota is a type of fighter that – even though he comes from a striking-based background, I mean, he's been working his game for a long time now, and he's actually faced a lot of good submission guys, and he's come away with only one submission loss throughout his career. So that's pretty impressive. If you look at his resume, who he's faced and only being submitted once, I think that's kind of a win for him, all considering, again, he's basically a striker that's had to evolve into a complete mixed martial artist, and he's done that. So what this comes down to is Hirota going to be able to have his range on the feet and find success hitting – Miller and with his accuracy and his power and trying to make his life miserable, or is Hirota going to be able to get the fight to the ground? Because I think as far as wrestling goes here, believe it or not, I think Hirota might have the edge and might be able to get a takedown or two, but is he going to want to play that game against Miller? I'm not so sure. So this comes down to, can Hirota use his striking ability and land the harder shots and punish Miller on the feet? Or is Miller going to be the one that kind of sets the pace, sets the tone on the feet a little bit with his length, and then on the ground has a big advantage here? It's tough. I mean, we're really not going to know until they get in there. I'm kind of on the fence with this as well. It's a pick'em type of fight for sure. I could see it realistically playing out either way. I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Hirota, though, because I think if he doesn't get submitted here, if it hits the scorecards, I think he's going to be a little bit more impressive on the judges' scorecards. He should win the decision there. And then I do trust his chin a little bit more than Cole's as well. I mean, he isn't getting any younger. He's 35 years old. I realize that. But I think, if anything, Hirota hits hard enough that I could see him kind of putting Miller out. And I don't see Miller probably knocking Hirota out, even though with that length, and like I said, it's probably a little bit underrated striking on Miller's end as well. So I'm just slightly leaning a little bit more towards Hirota to win this fight. We'll see how it plays out, but I think that's going to be my official pick.
My main issue here is that Masuda Hirota, as much of a solid veteran as he is, as talented and as he is, and as much success as he has had outside the UFC, he just has not been able to replicate that success inside the octagon. His first stretch in the UFC did not go well, and that includes his run in his fight in Strikeforce against Pat Healy, which was competitive, but again, he lost. And then after that Japanese reality show, he made it to the finale. The final battle was against Ishihara, and they've battled to a draw. So he's still, after basically four fights under the Zuffa banner, is winless. And I don't think it gets any easier here. I know Cole Miller is not at the best of his career. He's on a bit of a decline, but he's still dangerous. I mean, he's a guy that still has power in his hands. He has a massive 7-inch reach advantage over Hirota in this fight. He is way taller, way longer, and he is, in my opinion, significantly better on the ground, although Hirota might have better wrestling. So that is one thing to consider. Though the one thing that I'm concerned about with Miller is his last fight against Alex Caceres. Caceres was just able to get inside on him in the first two rounds and just beat him up with repeated combinations. Miller just was not able to keep him at bay with his length. And I know that Caceres is longer than Hirota, but I mean, he didn't have the same reach as Miller, but he was still able to just tee off on him until he started to slow down a little bit in the third round. So Miller hopefully has learned from that, but if he hasn't, then I can see Hirota having a lot of success on the feet. It's just all about whether or not you can pressure Miller and get inside on him on the feet without leaving yourself open to being taken down. And Miller isn't exactly a monster takedown artist either. A lot of his takedowns have in the UFC have been clinches, trips. Maybe he hurt somebody on the feet and jumped on a submission, like against Sam Cecilia or Ross Pearson. So maybe those type of situations. So, That being said, I do think that Cole Miller can win this fight. I think even though he's not amazing at using the reach, I think he can at least frustrate Hirota a little bit on the feet. And then if it goes to the floor, I think Miller could be the second guy to submit Hirota since Shinya Aoki, you know, had that famous arm break against him way back in the day. So I'm going to side with Cole Miller here, but I am not crazy confident about it. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have a light heavyweight contest between Henrique Da Silva, who is 12-0, and UFC newcomer Paul Craig, who is 8-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Da Silva minus 300, the comeback on Craig at plus 220. Right now, everybody, a little bit more action coming in on Craig. It's down to minus 225 for Da Silva. Comeback on Craig is plus 185. So they're taking the bait right now on the plus money with Craig because he's an undefeated prospect. There's some hype and buzz around him in the UK scene for sure. He's a submission specialist, really get aggressive ground game from the top or bottom. So he's able to submit most people with a slick, slick submission game off his back, especially. You should see him. I mean, you can't make a mistake against this guy because he transitions so well from armbar to triangle. I mean, he's already working. When he gets on his back, he's already working to finish you off. And in most cases, he gets it done. So he's a Bama light heavyweight champion for a reason. I mean, the guy is definitely a talented grappler. But the problem with him is I think he's not a very complete fighter. I mean, if you watch him fight overall on the feet, he's got a little bit of power. I mean, he's got some size for the division as well, so he's not small. But he's just not overwhelming with the strikes. I mean, he kind of sits back a little bit too much sometimes, and you could definitely land on the guy. You could put him in some trouble. And then his takedown game isn't that great either. So I think what he needs to do is drag the fight to the floor any which way he can, whether it's a trip. I mean, he has had some double leg takedowns in the past where I've seen that were okay. But against higher level competition, is it really going to work? I don't think it is. So the problem for Craig is I think he needs to have this fight take place on the ground, and he needs basically Da Silva to put him there. And I don't know if it's going to work out that way. We'll see what kind of IQ Da Silva has in this fight here. Of course, Da Silva, having a BJJ background in his own right, he's never been submitted in the past, but he's more well known for his striking. And that's how he's going to get the job done here, I think, as well. I mean, we've seen BJJ black belts get submitted in the past, so I don't think he wants to fill it around with Craig's guard or even get in that situation here where you have a clear path of victory, which is kind of standing there, keeping the fight upright, and then just landing your devastating striking attack, which obviously Da Silva has plenty of. So I think that's where it's a tough matchup for Craig. I know he's that undefeated prospect again coming in with some buzz around him, but I think he's just going to run into a brick wall here against Da Silva. I think Da Silva is going to make him pay for it on the feet. I think it's going to pretty much be a clear win for Da Silva here, and I think he probably wins the fight by stoppage. So if Da Silva doesn't get caught in the sub, which I think he probably does not, he's going to win it. I don't think he goes to scorecards. I think Da Silva does get the job done before it does. So my pick is Da Silva to defeat Craig.
Watching Paul Craig fight in all of his previous fights before the UFC, especially his Bama run, he does have a really solid overall ground game, but everywhere else, it's not that great. I mean, his wrestling is average to below average. His stand-up is definitely leaves something to be desired, and his overall top control is not that great. So that actually takes out a lot of opportunities for him to beat Henrique Da Silva. Da Silva is most vulnerable to guys that have a lot of power, that can step inside with some explosive ability and just crack. And Paul Craig just cannot do that. Da Silva is, that's where he's most vulnerable, is a big, powerful, stand-up artist in the light heavyweight division. And that is just the opposite of Paul Craig. Da Silva has a solid overall ground game. He's used it against stand-up strikers to win, to come back against fighters that maybe he was, losing against. And, I think his ground game is definitely good enough to avoid a lot of the tricks that Craig would throw at him on the canvas and just either get back to his feet or just survive and then eventually get back to his feet, because Henrique Da Silva is going to want to keep this fight standing against Paul Craig. Paul Craig has a dangerous submission game. He's got guillotine chokes, triangle chokes, you name it, he can do it. He doesn't have the best ability to gain a dominant position on the ground. So that is another thing. A lot of people Once they get to the UFC, they can't pull off some of the submissions they used to be able to pull off. So the best submission artists are people that can, that have a lot of control on the ground. And I don't see Paul Craig having a lot of control on the ground, especially against somebody like Henrique da Silva that knows what he's doing on the canvas. So for the most part, I just see this fight staying standing. Paul Craig will try to get it to the floor repeatedly. I don't think he has a lot of success with it. And then eventually Henrique da Silva is either going to clip him and put him out, or he could just play it safe and ride this out to a decision, outpointing him. So my pick is going to be Henrique da Silva as well. Now moving on to the main card, we have a welterweight contest between Alan Joban, who is 14-4, and Mike Perry, who is 9-0. Now Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Perry -140 to come back on Joban at even money. Right now, looking over fivedimes.eu, it's currently Perry -130, Joban is +110. And there has been two action on this fight as well. Early on was Joban, now we're getting, started getting some action back on Perry as well. And it'll continue. I mean, both these guys are known for what they do best, and that's striking. And that's knocking people out in most cases. I mean, Joban is a talented striker. No doubt about that. I mean, unfortunately for him, I mean, if you look at his resume, he could be even better, because I think he beat Alves and he lost that decision. I mean, I'm sure most people out there do as well. So that was one setback on his resume there for him. Of course, he did lose to Tumanov, and that is not a bad loss in a way. I mean, unfortunately for him, he got knocked out, so that's never a good thing. But Tumanov is one of the best strikers in the whole sport, in my opinion. I mean, he's definitely a technical, precise striker, which is a lot different than Perry. I mean, Perry is more of the power punching wrestler type of knock your head off type of guy. He's got some technical skill at times, but he's not as technical as a guy like Tumanov. So this is definitely an interesting fight. And if you look at it throughout Joban's career, he's performed relatively well, although there is some signs of him slowing down as the fight progresses a little bit as of late. I know he's got some other stuff in his career. I mean, as far as modeling goes, he's a busy guy. I mean, Joban is definitely a guy that I'm not sure how much focus time he has to put into this sport. It seems like he's a full-time fighter though, for the most part. But that being said, I mean, his cardio does seem to give him some problems as the fight progresses, especially against aggressive fighters that look to take the fight to the floor or that like to push a high pace on the feet as well. So that'll be interesting to keep an eye on. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe I'm looking into that a little bit too much, but I think that is definitely an issue for Joban. Now, Perry, on the other hand, I mean, he's been coming off of a couple pretty impressive wins. I mean, if you look at it, what he was able to do with Lim, that was a pretty impressive win for him. And then coming back and beating a guy like Roberts, which at the time was that undefeated type of prospect. I realize he had a lackluster performance in the fight before, but still, Roberts getting a win like that as well. So back-to-back quality wins to start off your UFC career. And of course, they were on short notice as well. So you got to give credit where credit's due, and Perry has performed better than I thought he would, honestly, because coming into the UFC, I thought Perry was one of these guys that, of course, he hits really hard. I mean, he's got that special type of knockout power, but he has some flaws in his game. I mean, he gets a lot. He's been taken down before that I've seen as well. And I mean, I didn't think his chin was going to hold up as well as it has, but so far in his UFC career, it's really looked okay. So I think what's going to come down to here is that power is going to really make an impact on Joban. Joban, he's been rocked in several of his fights. Now, he's tough enough that he doesn't wilt under that pressure. He doesn't have that quit in him, so he ends up kind of gathering himself well and getting back into the fight and finishing things off strong. So you got to respect that from Joban. But is he going to get a second chance with a guy like Perry? I'm not so sure. So I think Perry's power on the feet is going to be a little bit too much for Joban. I think it is going to be a striking war that I could realistically see ending either way. But if I had to pick one of these guys, I'm going to go with Perry. I think this fight does stay upright, and they just get in a firefight. And what happens is I think Perry lands that big bomb before Joban, and he probably puts him out. So I am going to lean with Perry. I just think right now he's got momentum on his side. He's going to be a little bit more confident because he's kind of almost got that ignorance about him where he doesn't – I mean, he's undefeated. He doesn't know what a loss is, and he thinks he's better than he actually is. And that confidence level might actually come into play here. It get him over the edge a little bit against a fighter like Joban. So we'll see. Not that Joban is lacking in confidence by any means, but I still think right now Perry almost doesn't know any better. I mean, this is a tough fight, and he's not going to be intimidated at all. He's going to come to fight, and he probably gets the job done. So a little bit more faith in Perry right now, and I'm even surprised I'm saying that myself because I do think he's a flawed fighter, probably overrated, but I think stylistically this matchup isn't that bad for him, and I think he probably gets a W here. So I'm going Perry's way.
And I actually am thinking a little bit more towards the other side. Yeah, Mike Perry has picked up two wins in the UFC, both stoppage wins in his brief run so far. And he has a lot of power, and he kind of has that flamboyant attitude that, you know, just almost that, the attitude that people would make fun of, you know, they train UFC. They, you know, you mess with my girl, bro. Those guys that have the affliction tattoos and stuff. So that's kind of the mentality that he brings. And some people almost, have attached themselves to it. And it's been kind of entertaining so far. But, for the most part, I just think that Mike Perry is getting overhyped a little bit. Maybe people, sometimes if you joke about something long enough, people actually start to believe it. And I think some people are actually starting to believe that Mike Perry is a really good UFC welterweight prospect. And I still don't see it. Yeah, he does have two wins, and they're both over guys that were not bums by any stretch. But again, I don't think those wins are enough to proclaim this guy as the next big thing. I think Alan Joban is going to provide a really stiff test here for Mike Perry. We're gonna learn a lot about Mike Perry. Joban has a reach advantage. I mean, both of these guys are almost certainly going to be standing up for this fight. And Joban has a reach advantage. Joban, I think, has a little bit better technique. He throws straighter punches. He fights longer. Neither guy has a good chin. Joban's is probably a little worse. I mean, his defense is just not great. He gets caught a little bit more. So that is definitely something that I'm a little bit concerned about. Both guys push a high pace, but Joban is a little bit more accurate too. So I think, for the most part, I think just Alan Joban being a little bit more experienced and having been in there against a few tougher guys, not just in his UFC run, but before his UFC run as well, I think that gives him a little bit of an edge. And even though Mike Perry hasn't shown a bad chin in the UFC, I definitely know that he has been, you know, blasted when he was fighting outside the UFC by people that were clearly not on the level of somebody like Joban. So I think that Joban can win this fight. I mean, it's really going to boil down to, can Joban avoid getting cracked by something really nasty from Perry? And Perry definitely has that knockout ability. He has power. So if he connects, then Joban can definitely get hurt and get put out. But I think that if Joban fights technically, uses his distance properly, has been improving his defense, then he can definitely win this fight. I mean, Mike Perry is a bit sloppy. He's a bit wild. And as long as Joban doesn't get suckered into a brawl, then I think he can win a technical stand-up fight. He just has to avoid getting into those wild, crazy exchanges like we saw in the Cub Swanson-Du Ho Choi fight this past weekend. If that happens, I think Mike Perry wins the fight hands down. But if Joban can pick Perry apart a little bit and frustrate him, then I think that Perry will start to make even more mistakes that Joban can capitalize on. So I'm going to side with Alan Joban here. Now, dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have a potential double retirement fight here between a pair of longtime veterans of the sport in Uriah Faber, who is 33-10, and Brad Pickett, who is 26-12. Now, Nick, what's the MMA Oddsmakers perspective on this one?
I open Faber minus 400, the comeback on Pickett at plus 280. Right now, looking over at Five Dimes, it is currently Faber minus 440. The comeback on Pickett is at plus 350. So, again, parlay action coming in Faber's way. I'm sure everybody's thinking that's an automatic type of win for him, and they got some serious confidence level. I'm not as confident in it, but at the same time, I mean, stylistically speaking, both these guys have been around the sport for a long time. It's amazing that this is actually the first time they've ever faced each other, because, I mean, they've been towards the top of the bantamweight division now for a long time. And, you know, it's just surprising it's taking this long, I guess, for their paths to cross kind of sort of thing. But overall, I mean, if you look at stylistically how they match up, Pickett's a warrior. He's been one of those guys that I've always been really proud of in a way, because he's one of the guys that you could tell was just an okay fighter at one point in his career, and he put the time in, and I've said it time and time again on different podcasts along the way, but he made himself good. I mean, it wasn't like he was a natural talent. He put the work in. And for guys like that, that have gone from, you're an okay fighter, to being a pretty solid fighter, to a title contender type of fighter throughout his career, you got to respect it. So I've seen the improvement throughout Pickett's career, and much respect. I mean, it's hard not to like a guy like that. So he's put the work in and got himself in this spot. I mean, unfortunately for him, obviously at age 38, his better days are definitely behind him. He is on the decline. I mean, it's pretty evident now. His chin, I think, is only going to get worse as time progresses. He's just a warrior. I mean, he's been clipped and clipped again, and for the most part, it's held up pretty well. But I think that obviously the writing's kind of on the wall for him at this point, and this might actually be his last fight as well. We'll see. I'm not saying he's going to retire here, but we'll see what happens. I mean, I know it's been kind of speculated as well. Now, Faber, same thing can be said about him. I mean, Faber usually – beats everybody outside of title matchups. We've seen that. I mean, recently he's kind of suffered losses. I mean, look at Jimmy Rivera, of course. That's one of them. So outside of the title fights, he's been losing now a little bit as well. But that being said, I mean, he's fought the who's who throughout his division, throughout his career, regardless of the division, I should say. And he's performed awesome. I mean, what more can you say about Faber? He's a well-rounded fighter, smart fighter. I mean, devastating submission ability on the ground. So fast, so technical, so smooth on the feet. He can hang in there with most fighters. I mean, look at guys like Jose Aldo just tearing up his legs. He's got heart of a champion. He's got, I mean, there's not much more I can say. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this fight. You guys know what I'm talking about. I mean, Faber has always been towards the top of the game for a reason. He has had a lot more of that natural ability. Not that he hasn't worked hard, but I just think he is a step ahead of Pickett here. I think he's going to be the faster fighter on the feet. I think he could be a little bit dangerous. I mean, he's got underrated knockout power, and now with Pickett's chin kind of being a little bit more suspect than you'd like to see at this point of his career, I think Faber could even actually do some damage there. But on the ground, if it gets there, I expect Faber to have the advantage there as well. I mean, that sick guillotine choke that he's got, his scrambling ability, everything when it comes to Faber's ground game is pretty impressive. So I think he's got the edge on the ground, probably has the edge on the feet as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I expect it if Pickett survives and doesn't get finished in this fight, it probably hits the scorecards, and it's going to be pretty close. I wouldn't be surprised at all if it's a competitive type of decision, because I do believe that Pickett's going to come to fight. I mean, if this is one of his last fights, he's definitely going to put it all out there on the line, and he always comes to perform. So good fight. I'm glad they kind of match it up, because it is going to be a fun fight to watch, and both these guys definitely want to come away with a win, and you know they're going to be performing at their best. So I'm going to pick Faber to win. I just think stylistically he's just a tough matchup for Pickett, because he's probably better in almost every area across the board. So Faber's my pick.
Yeah, this is definitely a great matchup between some solid veterans in the sport. And Uriah Faber, Brad Pickett, I expect this to be a really solid back-and-forth scrap. I mean, Pickett is talented. He's a veteran. He's been there just about as long as Faber has. And he has definitely, had his lumps. I mean, Pickett, I mean, you go back and see the guys that he's lost to for the most part, and they have been some of the nastier people in the UFC. I mean, Yuri Alcantara, Thomas Almeida, Ian McCall, Michael McDonald, Eddie Wineland, Hayden Barrow. I mean, those are all guys that were usually tops in their division or excellent prospects or just killers for the most part. So, Pickett and Pickett still does have a little bit of magic in him. I mean, you saw that with his win over Francisco Rivera. So, he's a guy that is solid on the feet. He has pretty good boxing fundamentals, nice uppercuts, good combinations. His chin is definitely starting to go. But, he can hold his own, and his recovery is usually pretty good. And Pickett has an excellent ground game. Good, grappling, good takedowns, some sneaky submissions. You go way back into the WEC, pulled off a Peruvian necktie, one of my favorite submissions of all time. So, Brad Pickett definitely, is capable of surprising you. But that being said, I just don't think he can hold his own here against Uriah Faber. Faber is going to be insanely motivated. I mean, this is almost all but guaranteed to be the final fight of his career. He was never able to win a title in the UFC, but he had plenty of opportunities to fight for him. He's one of the most popular fighters under 155 pounds of all time, probably the most popular other than when Conor McGregor was on his featherweight run. And Uriah Faber, he has high energy, very aggressive on the feet, ton of heart, great wrestling, great ground game, aggressive submissions, pretty good power. So I think, for the most part, Faber is just going to be a little bit too much here. I think he'll just overwhelm Pickett. I think Faber can knock Pickett down on the feet, even though technically Pickett might be a little bit better. I think Faber has a little bit more speed and power, and that could overcome some of Pickett's technical advantages. And then on the ground, while Pickett does have a pretty crafty submission game, I think Faber's wrestling is better than Pickett's, and Faber's, sometimes he just goes for something and just pushes you until you just relent. And I think he's going to do that here. I think he's going to have the crowd behind him, and it's going to be an incredibly emotional night for him, but I think that he'll rise to the occasion, and I can see Uriah Faber not just winning, but probably finishing Brad Pickett here. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have a welterweight contest between Sage Northcutt, who is 8-1, and Mickey Gall, who is 3-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open up Gall minus 140, the comeback on Northcutt even money. Tough line to set, I mean, especially with all the hype surrounding Northcutt. And now Gall is starting to get a little bit of hype in his own right. And, of course, Gall calling for this fight. He wanted to face Northcutt here. Makes this fight definitely interesting. As far as line movement goes so far, Gall's at minus 120 right now. Northcutt's at even money at 5 dimes. Now, it's interesting because there was some early action coming in on Gall. Now we're getting action back towards Northcutt. So I wouldn't even be surprised to see this fight flip and we see Northcutt becoming the slight favorite as it goes. That being said, I'm not sure if it's really justified. It is definitely an intriguing matchup because what we know from Gall thus far, he's a really good grappler. I mean, we knew that was his strength coming into the UFC, and he's performed relatively well. If you look at his win over Punk, he derailed that hype train awful quick. His win over Jackson, that was pretty impressive as well. But those two guys are not really guys you can really brag about on your resume. I mean, granted, they were UFC fights, so you got to fight who they put in front of you, and those were definitely easy outs for him at this point. Northcutt is going to be the better of the three fighters, of the couple fighters that he's faced. So he's going to be definitely a tougher test because Northcutt is a more well-rounded, more complete mixed martial artist. Even though he comes from a sport karate, kickboxing type of background, he's obviously developed his wrestling game. He has a bit of a ground game as well. So he is definitely a more complete, legit MMA fighter than the guys that Gall's faced so far. So there is question marks about Gall going in deeper waters. Being able to maybe stay up on his feet if he can't get the fight to the floor, how he's going to fare on the feet as well. From what I've seen so far, I've been impressed with Gall. I think even on the feet, he's got a little bit of power. I don't think he's going to be lost on the feet. He could be effective there as well, but his bread and butter is getting the fight to the floor. And on the floor, I think he could dominate a lot of people, especially at 170 pounds. So I think that Gall's jiu-jitsu game is legit, and it's going to give Northcutt all sorts of problems. So Northcutt's going to have to try to keep off the ground against a guy like Gall. He's going to have to try to, I think, use his strength, which is going to be his speed, his athleticism on the feet, his diverse striking skill to do some damage along the way and kind of mix things up. I think Northcutt wants to avoid the ground, even though he has a pretty sick guillotine choke. He's got an okay ground game overall. It's not going to be up to par with Gall's, as I mentioned. So he wants to stay away from that and try to exploit things on the feet. On the feet, though, Northcutt has been rocked a little bit as well. So I do question his chin. I do question Northcutt's cardio as well. We could see that he slows down in round two and round three as the fight progresses typically. So there's some question marks surrounding Northcutt that he needs to address. I know he's been working hard, and I expect to see probably the best version we've seen of him because he's been training with some great training partners, training with Rufus Sport. He was getting Woodley ready, of course, for a fight as well that he recently had, obviously. So Northcutt has been in the gym with some good fighters. I'm expecting him to get better and better with the athleticism that he has. I mean, he's probably going to soak some of this stuff up like a sponge. So he's got a long way to go. He's only 20 years old. So I'm expecting improvements from Northcutt. But again, on the other hand, Gall's only 24. Same thing could be said with him. So both these guys are young guns that are going to keep on improving. But this is definitely an intriguing matchup. Styles make fights. I'm going to go with Gall's ground game. I think he does find a way to get to the floor. And once on the ground, I think he does kind of have his way with Northcutt on the ground. I don't think Northcutt's up to par with Gall's submission game. And I think that's what's going to matter in this fight. So I think Gall does win this fight and probably by submission. So that's going to be my pick.
I'm going to keep this one pretty simple. Sage Northcutt is one of the best athletes in the entire UFC roster, but he's still raw. Even with 9 professional fights to Mickey Gall's 3, Sage Northcutt hasn't quite put everything together. He doesn't have the MMA in transitions going. Like he's either standing and looking for, you know, a kickboxing match, or he's on the ground and he's trying to work, you know, his jiu-jitsu off of his back. Like he doesn't have like that great ability to go in transition in the MMA. And that's really important if you want to be a complete fighter. You know, you need to be able to easily get to your feet if somebody takes you down. You need to be able to, you know, land a big strike out of the clinch or, you know, knee a guy as you're getting up from the ground. You know, just there's a lot of little things that Sage Northcutt doesn't do yet. And then the other things that are really important really are the fact that Sage Northcutt's conditioning has betrayed him repeatedly. And then most importantly of all is the fact that his ground game does leave a lot to be desired. I mean, the guy does have insane strength. He can lift people over his head and slam them, and he can get takedowns, but he does not have a great submission game. And when he's on his back, I mean, he shows no urgency whatsoever in getting back to his feet. So I think in a fight against Mickey Gall, I just see a repeat of the CM Punk fight, except, you know, Sage will put up more of a fight. Mickey Gall is competent enough on the feet to hold his own long enough to close the distance and get this fight to the floor. And once Sage Northcutt has been put on his back, I just don't see him offering much resistance here. Maybe Mickey Gall doesn't submit him right away, but I think Mickey Gall wears him out and probably submits him in the second round. I really have been impressed with Mickey Gall. I think, he's a lot better than the UFC anticipated. Obviously with his performance against CM Punk, but this obviously is a big step up, but I still think that Mickey Gall has what it takes. The guy has a long history of grappling experience prior to his MMA career. He's been in there against some really talented, ground artists. And if he gets this fight to the floor, I don't see how Sage Northcutt survives it. So I'm going to side with Mickey Gall. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a women's strawweight fight between Paige VanZant, who is 7-2, and Michelle Waterson, who is 13-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in VanZant, -180, the comeback on Waterson at +140. That line has plummeted a little bit. It's down all the way to currently -110 either way. Wow, it even shifted even more recently as we were actually talking and recording this podcast, because VanZant was about -120 or so. Now it's -110 VanZant. Waterson is -110 as well. So exactly a coin flip type of fight right now. Bettors are coming in on Waterson more so than VanZant. A little bit surprised. I thought VanZant would still be the more popular fighter amongst, I guess, this newer, you know, fan base that the UFC's had. I mean, VanZant obviously Dancing with the Stars or whatnot. I mean, the diehards know who Waterson is, and she's an incredibly talented fighter. There's no doubt about that. Most of her fights, of course, have come, or most of her recent fights, I should say, have come under the Invicta banner. And really, she's an outstanding fighter. I mean, she could be fighting as low at 105 pounds. I mean, the UFC doesn't have that atomweight division, but at the same time, she belongs. I know it's kind of a tough cut for her, but she belongs, I think, at fighting at 105 pounds. So fighting at 115 pounds here against VanZant, she's not going to be really lost as far as that goes. Obviously, she's had some experience at 115 pounds as well, but I think it is going to come into play a little bit, because VanZant is going to be the more powerful of the two. I think she's going to be the bully in this fight, where Waterson is going to be a little bit more technical. Waterson has a good stand-up game. Obviously, she trains at a good camp from Jackson's and crew. She has a lot of great training partners, good coaching staff behind her. She's well prepared in every fight that she faces. She's just, to me, a little bit inconsistent with some of her performances, though, in the past. I mean, if you look, she comes away with a really solid win, and then her next fight, she looks maybe not up to par as much as you'd like her to look. I mean, she's just not as consistent as you'd like to see. But again, technically speaking, she has a technical skill set on the feet, on the ground. She has a pretty slick submission game, but you always have to be cautious. She's the type of girl that, I mean, you wouldn't be surprised who she submits, honestly, in her weight class. I mean, she's that good, that slick with her sub game. But that being said, she's going to have her hands full with Van Zandt. I think Van Zandt, again, puts the pressure on. She's going to be the higher-paced fighter overall. She's going to be the bully in this fight. I think she could pin Watterson up against the cage. If she goes to the ground, I think she's going to be the one in top position on the ground as well. She's going to have to be careful and cautious again against the sub there. But I think she's – from what she showed us thus far, I know she suffered a setback against – Rose Namajunas not too long ago, but even though she did suffer a submission loss in that fight, late in that fight, it was the fifth round, I believe. But that being said, I think she fought out and she showed toughness and she faced a lot of adversity in that fight. And I was actually impressed because a lot of fighters would have quit. So she does have that toughness about her that she has the will to win. And I think that's going to drive her even more so in this fight to maintain and not get caught up in some of the submission attempts or whatnot that Watterson has to offer. So I think Van Zandt does not get submitted in this fight. I think on the feet, it should be close, but I think again, Van Zandt's going to be a little bit more powerful and she's going to be the bully. So I expect Van Zandt to actually outpoint Watterson and probably win on the cards. Watterson's going to be pretty tough to stop as it goes though. Round four, round five championship rounds for anybody's going to be tough. So we'll see how it goes in those rounds. If there's going to be finished, I would think that that's around the mark that we see a finish. But outside of that, I really think it probably does go and we'll see a competitive decision. And if that's the case, then I do think Van Zandt probably wins. So in my opinion, Watterson probably needs to finish the fight before it hits the cards to win this fight. And I think Van Zandt's going to be too tough for her to do that. So I'm going to pick Van Zandt to win. So I do disagree with the early action coming in on Watterson. I think that Van Zandt should be the slight favorite in this spot. So I'm going to go with her.
I can understand the early action on Watterson because, honestly, she is the more technical fighter of the two. Watterson has some solid overall striking technique. She has a good jab. She has good kicks. Her run through Invicta, where she claimed the atomweight title and then defended it, and then he had a competitive title loss before coming to the UFC, was actually very impressive. She showcased a solid overall understanding of the ground game, and her striking has definitely improved leaps and bounds. So she's not just a one-trick pony that can get some submissions on the ground. She can work over people on the feet as well, and she's not giving up a lot of size here against Paige Van Zandt, even though Watterson has been able to make the atom weight division in the past, and Paige definitely is can go no lower than 115. Now, in regards to skill set and experience, Watterson has been in there against some pretty tough cookies. Obviously, she won her title from Jessica Penney, which was a very impressive performance, a crazy fight in Invicta. If you haven't seen it, you should go back and watch it. It was a really, really gritty performance, probably the best of Michelle Watterson's career. Unless you're counting her last fight against Angela Magana in her UFC debut. But the thing that I keep going back to is the fact that this is a five-round fight. And even though Paige isn't on Michelle's level of striking technically, I think that she can wear Watterson down. Now, one thing I am definitely concerned about with Paige Van Zandt is her last fight. She wanted to stand with Beck Rawlings. She's been working on her stand-up, and she picked up an early second-round TKO victory with a jumping switch kick that cracked Rawlings and then set up a TKO finish with some follow-up strikes on the ground. Now, I think that could be something that could be a bit of a disaster almost for Paige, because maybe she falls in love with the stand-up and wants to just stand and bang forever. And if that happens, then I think she could definitely lose this fight, because if you go back and watch the Van Zandt-Rawlings fight, Van Zandt clearly lost the first round. All she did was a lot of dancing on the outside. She, flung some crazy kicks. She landed maybe one good combination with her hands. But for the most part, she was just, losing a point fighting battle to Beck Rawlings in the first round, and she can definitely lose that to Michelle Watterson, who I think is just able to land good straight punches and kicks and can pick Paige apart in just a pure stand-up fight, just because Paige just isn't on that level yet. She just hasn't been able to add that level of expertise to her game. She needs a lot more refinement before she's on that level. Where Paige thrives is just clinching, getting to her opponent, throwing knees, throwing elbows, dragging fights to the floor, beating her opponents up with ground and pound. and just wearing them down. Like, I think that, and she absolutely has no quit in her whatsoever. I mean, her fight against Rose Namajunas, a lesser fighter would have given up in the first round, and she made it all the way nearly to the end of the fight. And, she earned a lot of respect, especially from me, for that performance, showing just how much heart that she has. And that's the thing that I think is going to help Paige the most. Even if things don't start well for her in this fight, I think, that Watterson will not be able to find a finish, and then Paige will be able to turn it up a notch and then just wear Watterson out and then eventually find a stoppage victory, or just do enough to win the latter few rounds and win a decision. Another thing you do have to consider is Michelle Watterson is coming off of not one, but two broken hands that have sidelined her heading into this matchup. This fight was supposed to take place over a year ago, and actually Namajunas stepped in for Watterson to fight Van Zandt and hand her that loss. So, maybe there's a little resentment there with Paige, but the other thing is, how much can Michelle Watterson trust her hands? Because, she just has not been able to keep them healthy. And if Paige is as tough as I think she is, I can see Michelle Watterson breaking her hands on Paige's face or the top of her head again in this fight, and Paige refusing to relent. And then Michelle, just getting a bit more gun shy as the fight goes, because she doesn't want to throw her hands because it hurts. So I'm going to side with Paige Van Sant. I think that her conditioning is going to be a huge factor here, and her pace and her pressure. And as long as she doesn't try to make this a 5-round stand-up fight, then she should win it. So I'm going to side with Paige Van Sant. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC on Fox 22. Now, our premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at @MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of all free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.